Welcome to Lupin Limited's Q1 FY26 earnings conference call. I'm Ravi Agrawal, Head of Investor Relations for Lupin. Thank you for your participation in the call today. Please note that all participants' line will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the opening remarks. Please also note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand over the conference over to the management. Thank you, and over to you.
Thank you, Ravi. Hi, friends. I'm very pleased to welcome you to our Quarter One Fiscal Year 26 earnings call. I have with me here Nilesh, our Managing Director, and our CFO, Ramesh, and of course, Ravi online as well. We look forward to sharing with you our highlights for the quarter, as well as outlook for the year ahead. We are delighted to begin the fiscal year on a very strong note, with continued double-digit growth in both revenues and profitability. Our margins have shown further improvement, rising by 330 basis points year-over-year, even as we increased investment in R&D by 150 basis points during the same period. Looking ahead, we are confident that this growth momentum will continue and reaffirm our EBITDA margin outlook for the fiscal year at 24%-25%. The first quarter marked a significant milestone for our U.S. business. We successfully launched tolvaptan with sole first-to-file exclusivity, resulting in our highest U.S. revenues since quarter four fiscal year 2017, when we had the Glumetza and the Fortamet franchise. And this is despite additional generic competition in albuterol. Our ability to seamlessly launch tolvaptan through specialty distribution channels stands as a testament to the strong execution and commercial capabilities we have built in the US. We are confident in our ability to sustain growth in the US market in the mid to long term, with a strong pipeline across complex product categories such as injectables, respiratory biosimilars, and 505B2 products targeting brand sales of $150 billion. We expect complex products to really drive a significant portion of our growth and future business. Additionally, we remain focused on expanding our specialty business, both organically and inorganically. Coming to India region, we reported growth of 7.8% year-over-year. Within this, our India formulations business recorded growth of 8.6% during the quarter, in line with IPM growth. While key therapies like cardiac, GI, and VMS grew ahead of the market, and we have also increased our chronic share from 64% last year to 65% this quarter, LOE on certain in-licensed brands in the diabetes segment have had a negative impact on our growth rates. I'm particularly heartened by our respiratory franchise performance, which grew 18.5% as against a category growth of 12.2% during the quarter. Also on an MAT basis, the volume growth has been 2.8%, double the volume growth in IPM during this period. During the quarter, we successfully completed the transfer of our OTC consumer healthcare business into a 100% owned subsidiary called Lupin Life Consumer Healthcare. We believe that this separation will allow the OTC business strategic flexibility to capitalize on the rapidly growing OTC market in India, while enabling the company to sharpen its focus on core strengths in the prescription drugs business. We are confident that our India formulations business will continue to outperform the market, propelled by our extensive portfolio of innovative and in-licensed products, as well as the broad reach of our 10,000 plus people sales force. The introduction of new products will be pivotal to our growth, with more than 80 product launches planned over the next 5 years. As a major player in the cardiac and diabetes segment, GLP-1 products will remain a core part of our India strategy over the next couple of years. In addition, we are deepening our presence in GI, aiming to establish this as our fourth major therapy area. We are also focused on expanding our presence in oncology and CNS segments going ahead. Turning to other developed markets, we achieved a 17% year-over-year increase, with Europe serving as a key growth driver, recording an impressive 28% increase for the quarter. These markets now account for 13% of our total sales, up from 11% 2 years ago. Looking ahead, we remain optimistic about sustaining this momentum, led by a robust pipeline of complex and specialty products going ahead. Our R&D expenses as a percentage of sales stood at 7.9% for the quarter. We are especially encouraged by our recent FDA approvals for generic Victoza and Glucagon, which highlight the progress we are making in complex injectables. We take pride in being the first Indian company to secure approval for a GLP-1 product for the US market. Nearly 70% of our R&D investments are directed towards complex and specialty products. We have a robust pipeline with over 60 product filings planned for the US market alone in the coming years. Our position in inhalation is expanding rapidly, not just in the US, but also across India, Europe, and other international markets. In the complex injectable space, our focus is on developing depot injections, peptides, iron chloride products, as well as 505(b)(2)s. We've also established a strong model in biosimilars outside the United States and are well positioned to enter the market in the US. On the specialty side, we are advancing a substantial 505(b)(2) pipeline and enhancing our portfolio with value-added medicines such as long-acting injectables, oral solids, IUD implants, and green propellant-based products. These initiatives will require increased investment, as we have indicated previously, and we anticipate R&D spend to be between 7.5 to 8.5% level in fiscal year 2026. On the compliance front, during the quarter, our Nagpur Unit 2 site received its EIR. While there were some observations in the 483 issued for Pithampur Unit 2 and Unit 3 sites, we are confident of addressing the observations effectively and would like to reiterate that we are committed to ensure that all our sites are fully compliant with the FDA and other regulatory agencies around the world. Before I hand it over to Ramesh for a more detailed performance analysis, I want to reiterate our optimism regarding our future growth trajectory. The recent approvals for generic Victoza and Glucagon and the expected approval of generic Risperdal Consta mark the beginning of our journey in complex injectable space, which will further strengthen our complex portfolio in the US. Looking ahead to fiscal year 2027, we expect to bolster our momentum with key launches from a biosimilars pipeline in the US as well. Our ongoing commitment to build a leading global specialty business, leveraging both in-house innovation and strategic acquisitions. We are confident that our focused investments in R&D, patient-centric approach to building specialty brands, and continued efforts in driving efficiencies will drive sustainable growth in the years ahead. With this, I will hand it over to Ramesh.
Thank you, Vinita. And friends, I welcome you all to our Q1 FY26 earnings call. This has been yet another quarter of consecutive double-digit growth across the top line and profits. I'm particularly pleased to highlight our EBITDA margins have expanded by 330 basis points year-on-year to 26.6% during the quarter, despite 151 basis points increase in R&D during this period. Diving into the numbers, sales for Q1 FY26 came in at 6,164 crores as compared to 5,514 crores in Q1 last year, a growth of 11.8% year-on-year. Amongst the key markets, the US grew by 24.3% year-on-year, India region has grown 7.8%, and other developed markets have grown 17.4% during the quarter. Our GIB business grew by 16% year-on-year. The US business, during the quarter, the US business recorded sales of $282 million, a growth of 22.3% year-on-year and 12.8% quarter-on-quarter on a constant currency basis. As Vinita mentioned, this quarter was a pivotal one for the US, the successful launch of Tolvaptan, its sole exclusivity. This is offset by low generic single-digit price decline in our base products and anticipated impact of new generic competition in Albuterol. We are continuing to execute on our strategy to improve our profitability in this segment, with yet another quarter of strong profitability business from this business. On the longer term, we remain confident of consistent delivery of profitable growth through an increasing share of complex products in our portfolio. Coming to India, the India region business grew by 7.8% year-on-year during the quarter. Within this, the prescription business grew by 8.6% year-on-year during Q1 FY 2026, in line with IPM growth. Chronic share during the period was higher at 65%, with key segments like cardiovascular, GI, and VMS growing ahead of the IPM growth. The share of in-licensed products is only around 6.2% as compared to around 12% in FY 2025, which also has a positive impact on our profitability going ahead. Insofar as other developed markets are concerned, revenues in our other developed markets were 775 crore, representing a growth of 17% year-on-year. This growth was led by a 28% year-on-year increase in Europe. Other emerging markets grew by 5.2%, with strong growth in South Africa offsetting tempered performance in LATAM and Philippines. Coming to various aspects of the P&L, other operating income at 105 crore has increased by 18 crore as compared to the first quarter of 2025. Gross margins. Coming to the profitability, gross margins continued their upward trajectory, with Q1 FY 2026 gross margins at 71.3%, up from 68.4% in Q1 last year, and up from 69.7% in Q4 FY 2025. This 290 basis points year-on-year improvement is driven by multiple factors, which includes better product mix, tailwinds on the input cost front, lower share of in-licensed products, increased volumes, and other cost improvements and efficiencies which we've undertaken over the last several quarters. Employee benefit expenses at 1,083 crore increased 11.5% year-on-year from 971 crore in Q1 FY 2025, translating to 17.6% of sales, similar to Q1 last year. This change is largely attributable to higher costs due to regular annual increments and business growth during this period. Q1 FY 2026 manufacturing other expenses came in at 1,772 crore, increasing 10.9% year-on-year from 1,598 crore in Q1 FY 2025 and 1,688 crore in Q4 FY 2025, translating to 28.7% of sales versus 29% last year. The expenses are mainly higher due to higher R&D costs and higher volumes in the normal course of business. R&D is at 484 crore at 7.9% of sales as compared to 350 crore, which is 6.3% of sales in Q1 FY 2025, with almost 70% of our R&D directed towards complex portfolio. For the full year, as earlier indicated, we expect R&D to be about 8.5%. EBITDA, excluding forex and other income, EBITDA was 1,641 crore vis-à-vis 1,286 crore same period last year, an increase of 27.6% year-on-year, with a margin of 26.6% versus 23.4% last year in the same period. On a quarter-on-quarter basis, margins have expanded by 340 basis points. This margin expansion is on the backdrop of higher gross margins and a lower fixed cost during the period, despite a higher R&D. As previously guided, we expect full-year EBITDA margins to be in the range of 24%-25%. Whilst we expect business to continue to exhibit robust performance, overall margins will be tempered by higher R&D spends and lower PLI in FY 2026 vis-à-vis 2025. Insofar as the ETR is concerned, it was 13.7% for this quarter. However, for the full year, we expect the ETR to be around 19%. Insofar as the balance sheet is concerned, we're still working on operating working capital, which is, of course, standing at 7,287 crore as of 30 June, against 6,821 crore as of 31st March, which translates to 106 days of working capital against 110 days in the previous quarter. Net cash at 1,239 crore as against 310 crore in 31st March 2025. Whilst we focus on increased cash generation for our business, we'd like to highlight that we continue to explore strategic allocation of our capital to address the long-term vision of the company. On the ESG front, We are pleased to report continued progress in Lupin's environmental, social, and governance performance, as demonstrated by our sustainability ESG ratings. Our risk exposure has notably improved from a classification of severe risk in 2019 to a medium risk in 2025. Additionally, through the Lupin Foundation, we have positively impacted the lives of 22,400 individuals by enhancing access to healthcare and promoting livelihood opportunities. With this, we open the floor for discussions.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Request all participants who wish to ask questions to raise your hands on the participant tab on the screen. We will wait for 30 seconds for the queue to assemble. So the first question is from Kunal Dhamesha. Kunal, you can start, please.
Hi, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on a good set of numbers. First question on the top line growth outlook. I think we have provided outlook on R&D, EBITDA margin, but if you could also provide our expectation for the overall top line and as well as US. And then a related question is Tolvaptan contribution in Q1, whether it was a partial contribution or a full quarter contribution?
Yeah, so top line growth for the year, as we have guided earlier, we expect strong double digit, both for the company and for the US. And Tolvaptan, we launched in late May. So it was partial quarter. Also, we didn't have... Since it's a specialty product, there was not too much of channel stocking, you know, ahead of the launch.
Sure. That's helpful. And second one on the India business, the overall India business growth seems to be lower than our formulation business. So has the adjacency, which is a small part of the business, has that kind of impacted, or there was a tender business last year that has impacted the growth? How should we think about it?
Yeah, it's primarily the tender business. It's the institution business, which is impacted. And as we've discussed before, that's lumpy. But by and large, I think we're in a good place on the global institution business as well.
Okay, sure. And one more, if I may, what would be the current drag from the adjacency business like diagnostics, etc., in this quarter particularly?
Yeah, so the impact on our EBITDA would be close to about 1%, really. They are still evolving and you know, coming up very nicely. So the long term obviously looks very alluring to us, but clearly, you know, they are still loss making at this stage.
Sure. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you, Kunal. The next question is from Vivek from Citi. Vivek, you are...
Yeah, hi. Thanks. Thanks for the opportunity. So, sir, can you help us understand how to look the US sales in FY27, right? In 26, it is going to be good because you launched Tolvaptan, etc. But in 27, there may be a cliff as products like Tolvaptan, Mirabegron, etc. That may not be as big as they are in 26. So how to look the overall sales in 27, especially for the US? And... what are the specific products, if you'd like to highlight, that can help you mitigate these the impact of decline in these products? Thank you.
Sure. I mean, so there are many moving parts right now. I mean, on also material products like Tolvaptan as well as Mirabegron. You know, right now there are no other tentative approvals on Tolvaptan, and it's a specialty product that requires... named patient REMS program. So we expect substitution to be a very different compared to simple oral solid generic. That's number one. Two, with mirabegron, there are, depending on the outcome of litigation, as well as the trial of some of our competitors later this year, there are multiple scenarios that can emerge. So we should have better clarity about that more at the end of this fiscal year. Certainly in the second half of the fiscal year, we should have better clarity on the competition for products like mirabegron. Third, I would say that we have a number of new growth drivers. We are very excited with the buildup of our injectable pipeline portfolio with the approvals of significant products like glucagon and liraglutide. We have a goal date for Risperdal Consta in September. So hopefully the quarter after that, we launch Risperdal Consta. So the injectables start becoming a growth driver for us at the second half of this fiscal year, building into fiscal year 27. And fourth, I would say that biosimilars is starting to look pretty promising as an opportunity, just given where things are in terms of access to market in the US. And from our perspective, we have pegfilgrastim that we will hope to receive approval for this year. We are making good progress on the OBI pegfilgrastim, so we would expect that hopefully to be filed and we'll also get approved in fiscal year 27 or 28. And fiscal year 27, we also expect in June 26, we have the goal date for ranibizumab that we filed a few months ago. So we expect both OBI as well as ranibizumab to potentially come to market in fiscal year 27, and building into fiscal year 28 as well. So, while some of the exclusive products, we will have additional competition impact. We think that some of the products are more sticky than others. And, we remain very optimistic about growth prospects. Certainly for the company overall, we expect a very high single digit growth for the next fiscal year, hopefully double digit as well, based on the efforts our team has undertaken.
And I'll just add, perhaps there might be some volatility amongst quarters and the like, but one is playing for the long term, and clearly we see secular growth over a period of time, over an extended period of time, given a focus on a number of differentiated products, 505B2s and the like.
So basically, in FY27, you are aspiring to be like a high single digit plus growth on 26, right? If I'm correct.
For the company as a whole.
For the company.
Yeah. And just one clarity on pegfilgrastim on-body injector. So have you filed or yet to file this product? Which product that you are expecting first, right? The normal pegfilgrastim or the OBI one?
I'm interested primarily in the OBI, although the pegfilgrastim approval will come sooner. We hope to file this during this fiscal.
Okay, just one more question I have on cost front, right? Last year, the company saved close to around $50 million. So it would be great, actually, if you can highlight what are the targets for the next couple of years, especially in the area segment where the company is working on as far as improvement in the cost structure. So I'm just trying to understand again margins for the 27, right? 27 is, you have guided 24-25%, but is it possible if the margins in 27 can dip on 27 on the base of 26, or you can still maintain margins in 27 on the base of 26? Thank you.
You know, the fact is we are playing for continuous margin expansion. And this is on the back of, in fact, buoyancy on the top line. And we did indicate that next year also we would grow at least single-digit numbers. But the focus on various items of cost is incessant. And you would appreciate, it's there to, for the evidence is there to see. And that will kind of provide for margin expansion going forward as well, despite, in fact, the kind of increases that we're seeing on the R&D front. So we're pretty optimistic about this.
Thanks, that's from my side.
Thank you, Vivek. The next question is from Saion Mukherjee of Nomura.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Vinita, one question is on this whole tariff scenario. We may see an announcement in the near term. How are you assessing that? Any color you can provide, given the kind of products that you have, or other mitigating measures that can be put in place? Basically, broadly trying to understand how you see the impact. Let's say if you have 10 or 15% kind of tariff being put on generic pharmaceuticals.
So Zion, it's of course hard to predict but where this lands based on the outcome of the 232 investigation. But I'd say that from a mitigating standpoint, the strategies that we have considered is one, wherever we can, where we have price flexibility, a price increase to offset the impact of tariff. Number two, products where we have the ability to tech transfer into the US, certainly in the two sites, both New Jersey as well as Coral Springs, we're looking at a potential to transfer those products. And we're also considering some IP transfers that, of course, will have a capital gains impact, but overall will really benefit us, especially on high-value products where transfer the IP to the US and contract manufacture in India. So combination of all of those measures, we expect to be able to mitigate good percentage of the impact of tariffs. And if it's 10-15%, I think it should be fairly manageable in any case. I mean, the question is it 25 or percent or the 150 to 200% kind of numbers that have been floated? But it
Right.
becomes
So
more.
this.
And you should also remember, at the end of the day, generics is all about access to medicines insofar as the population is concerned. So they would also be very conscious of whatever measures that they take so it doesn't impact them too much, considering the availability of products and the like in recent times.
Okay, that's helpful. And the second question, is on specialty. You're thinking about it for a while now. Given the changes that we are seeing in the US, particularly with respect to the pricing environment, is that changing your thought process around how you should be thinking about going about building the specialty business globally and in the US in particular?
So, strategically, our focus has really been in niche therapy areas where we can really add value. So, areas like respiratory, and again, niche respiratory products or products that are not large asthma COPD products that where we compete with big pharma. Plus, like rare neurology products like NaMuscla. I mean, we're actively developing NaMuscla for the US as well as other geographies, Europe included. So we expect that the impact of MFN, and all of the price reduction measures is likely going to have more of an implication for the large value categories, where there is material spent from a government standpoint and a payer standpoint. And given our strategy is more on niche products, we believe that we will be in a better position than large brand companies in any case.
Understood. If I can ask you, Smita, on NaMuscla, if you can update us on the timeline for the US and the market opportunity. Thank you.
So we are in active recruitment right now for our phase three study for US and Europe. We expect that the product will launch in the US in fiscal year 29. We believe that there's a market opportunity of between $100 to $200 million.
Okay, thank you. I'll join back. Thanks.
Thank you, San. The next question is from Kunal Randeria of Axis.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. Any update on semaglutide filing plans in Canada?
No, I think from a Near-term perspective, for the markets that open, we really have a partnered model. So we have a partnership in place that will get us into the market. But our internal injectable filing is a little bit later, due to the hurdle patent in the US and other major markets.
Sorry, I meant Canada, semaglutide in Canada.
So that will come through partnered, like Vinita said.
Okay, got it. Just to clarify on mirabegron patent litigation, there are, I think, two patents under active litigation, right? And in one of the patents, I think the outcome depends on what your one of the other competitor, how their litigation goes. So is there a likelihood of this drug facing competition by November itself?
Well, so it's hard to predict, I would say. It really would be hard to predict. And anybody who's going through litigation in the fall this year also has potentially looking at the timeline of our February trial, which is going to be material for the product.
Right. Got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kunal. The next question is from Damayanti of HSBC.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for the opportunity. I hope I'm audible.
Yes.
Okay. So my question is on your injectable portfolio buildup. So first, have you launched glucagon and lira in the US? And are these products completely in-house or you are engaging with some partners as well?
So we've launched glucagon yesterday and plan to launch liraglutide by October. And we manufacture the products in-house in Nagpur.
Okay, so why like we are waiting till next few months for Lira launch?
That's the time it takes to really do the validation and get launch quantities together.
Okay, and how do you see liraglutide market in the US given the market in general has moved to the new gen therapies, right? Your Sema and tirzepatide, etc. So do you think this market is still attractive?
We believe it's attractive because it's $500 million plus, and there are very limited number of players right now. And as the product gets more affordable with additional competition, we would expect that there is some share that the product should take from the overall class. So definitely the portion that is price sensitive.
Sure. So, from sales build-up perspective, we should assume by FY27, say that these two products are coming in FY26, and hopefully respiratory consta also comes through. So, you have three key products in your portfolio to start with, and then assuming it will take a few months to build out, etc. So, FY27 onwards, we can assume these to be a significant contributor in the US.
That's right.
Okay, my next question is on your EBITDA margin. So, Ramesh, you mentioned there was some 1% drag due to agency in India. So, similarly, can you quantify if there are other such drag on margins which are right now due to some investment or scale up which are underway, and then you expect these things to go away in a few years, a few quarters?
So what I actually meant was that the adjacencies are costing us some monies because essentially they are still evolving. There's essentially the digital business, the diagnostics business, the API CDMO business, and the like. So clearly, because there is time for them to evolve, they're all startups, so to speak. Clearly, they would evolve to a size, to critical mass, and they would start making profits. So until then, but for example, the diagnostics business is expected to kind of break even next year. That pathway has been very well set.
Okay, my next question is on your inhalers portfolio. On tiotropium, have you seen any meaningful market share than what we saw last quarter?
So it's been at a similar level.
So what is actually stopping you to gain more market share, or you have already reached the upper limit and then we might not see market share gain from here? What are your thoughts on tiotropium market share gain?
Yeah, the team has additional efforts around offsetting some of the costs to patients, especially in the Medicare, Medicaid covered patients. That's where we don't have a strong share. I mean, we have a really good share of the commercial covered patients, 50% plus. But the Medicare, Medicaid is where we are starting to see some benefits, but it's not showing in the numbers as of yet. But we hope that in the next couple of quarters, that builds up.
Okay, so going ahead, we might see more market share gain on the Medicare channel, but on the commercial channel, you are broadly maybe at optimum level. Is that the way to look at this
Yes.
product? Okay. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Damayanti. The next question is from Neha Manpuria from Bank of America.
Yeah, thanks so much, Ravi. My first question is on tolvaptan. Vinita, I think you'd mentioned that based on contracts that we have in place, we should be able to get to about a 25% market share on tolvaptan. So is that still the case, or have you seen additional traction on the specialty contracts and that market share could be higher?
So it is hard to predict. I mean, right now we've got a good ramp up with within the specialty channel, but it's still building. The conversion is still taking place. So I
Okay.
think that what you see is the impact of a couple of months of starting to build the share, but we should be able to see more of an impact in Q2 and Q3.
So the full contracted share will probably reflect exit of second quarter or third quarter. Would that be a fair assumption?
Yes.
Okay. And given that there is no tentative approval for tolvaptan, is it fair to assume that we could probably have a longer tail for tolvaptan versus, let's say, a usual FTF product?
We're hoping, if we had estimated that we'll have additional competition in 6 months, but if we don't see it, or if it's limited, one instead of two, perhaps there's a more of an upside. And in any case, even with additional competition, we expected a longer tail, given that it's a specialty product. It's the specialty channels and the physicians don't like to change patients over and over again to a new product.
Okay, understood. And my second question on glucagon, while your press release mentions, just the generic market, I mean the IQVIA market for the generic and the brand, there are also 505(b)(2) in glucagon. So would it be fair to assume that our generic would be able to probably even look at that part of the market, the 505(b)(2), or do you think it's just restricted to the generic products and the brand?
Yeah, so we're targeting the entire market, but we'll know as we in the next couple of months how much of a share we can take of the whole market.
Understood. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Neha. The next question is from Shyam Srinivasan of Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, good evening. Thank you for taking my question. I think the opening remarks you talked about potential new generic entrants on albuterol, right? So is there something that we need to worry? And also from your competitive study or market study, how far away is other generics on, say, Spiriva, perhaps?
Yeah, so Amphastar has entered the market, on albuterol, and we've seen some impact of that you also see in the quarter that we have anticipated. On Spiriva, I mean, you have multiple couple of companies that have filed, but just given the time it takes and the source of supply of these companies, it's hard to say, companies like Alvogen and Teva if they're going to get to the finish line on a timely basis. So, we hope it takes them as long as it took us 5 years to get approval.
So Vinita, safe to assume another at least 12, 18 months of like runway for us?
I would think so.
Okay, that's very helpful. Just a second question on biosimilar, since you have been starting to be more vocal, you've done an agreement on Zentiva. So yes, it's late entrant, especially into US, not necessarily Europe, but US, do you see economics still reasonable, something that you will allocate additional capital to? Opening remarks, again, you talked about on-body versus the just the regular one. So is there
Yeah.
some different entry strategy we might be doing as a follower, second wave, and how do we prepare for the 2029 kind of wave of the next biosimilars?
Yeah. So I think while we are a late entrant, just given the market evolution, we may not be a late entrant. Are you just seeing substantial kind of easing on market access in the last 6, 12 months, right? With Humira and the private labels that have come into market, like the Cordavis label, the Quallent label. They certainly have demonstrated the impact that some of the major customers can have with the private label strategy into the marketplace. So I'd say that from a capital allocation standpoint, we haven't shifted gears as of yet because we have a handful of products that are available to us already. I mean, we have, of course, pegfilgrastim, we have Onpro, and we have interest both from partners as well as, with a few of the oncology products that we have on a generic pipeline. Our commercial team is also looking at how we can leverage that to come to market direct. Plus, on the ophthalmic front, given our ophthalmic portfolio, products like ranibizumab, aflibercept that come to market potentially in 27 and 28 can be good drivers of growth for biosimilars for us, just given the limited number of competitors. And then in 29, we expect etanercept. We're going to be likely one of four, and that's still a material product despite the price erosion that it has seen after IRA. Or we'll see based on the IRA negotiation, still a significant product that we expect to benefit from. So I'd say, and then we have a pipeline that we were pursuing. I mean, there's satralizumab that we are developing. We are going to start clinical development of satralizumab soon. We have respiratory biosimilars, mepolizumab and benralizumab that help us serve multiple markets, multiple geographies, not only the US, but also Europe, where we have a considerable position now with Luforbec. And then in India, biosimilars are gaining momentum in our portfolio, especially of oncology and immune oncology products like pembrolizumab and nivolumab that we are developing for India. So biosimilars is emerging as a platform that is going to have relevance for us in US, other developed markets like Europe, Canada, Australia, as well as India. So a global platform that is really promising. So and we will see as we think that with the easing of the regulatory requirements from a clinical standpoint as well as market access, it certainly will lead other companies also to accelerate their plans on the biosimilars front. So we'll have to be mindful of portfolio choices that we make. Because again, it will be like complex generics. We want to participate in products where we are in the first wave and we have barriers to entry, where we have exclusivity or semi-exclusivity is what we're targeting, or we have a market position that we can leverage, like ophthalmics or respiratory.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shyam. Just a reminder to all participants who would like to ask questions, please raise your hands from the participant tab for more questions. In the meantime, we'll take the next question from Shashank Krishnakumar of MK.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question.
My first one was on Dulera. Are we still on track for an FY27 launch in this product in the US?
Yeah, so we're expecting to respond to the CRL in fiscal year 26, this fiscal year, and hopefully by the second half of fiscal year 27 or early 28, we should be in the market with Dulera.
Got it, thanks. Second question was on the India business. I think in-licensing share obviously has come down to mid-single digits now. Now, how do you sort of look at this going forward? Are we going to double down on our core business, or will in-licensing still remain a key part of our domestic growth strategy in the medium term? Just wanted to get your thoughts on this.
Sure. I think the focus on in-licensing remained all this while, but obviously with the LOEs and competition, that share has just been coming down. It's now down to 6% from a high of, I think, more than 20% at one point of time. The focus remains. I think, you know, for example, even on GLP-1s, on other products, there is intent to in-license. There's a rich funnel. But the focus in the last 3 years, I would say, has been moving to focus on our own portfolio, including building our own novel portfolio as well. We're making good progress on that. I think that will remain the primary focus. Obviously, for the right kind of products, we would still want to in-license.
Thanks. That's helpful. If I could just squeeze in one more. Vinita, I think you mentioned about phase three trials in the US for NaMuscla, but I think there has been a slight delay in phase three. So is it largely a function of patient recruitment, or has there been any other challenge there?
No, it has been patient recruitment that has been slow. So we are looking to actually open up some new centers as well.
Got it. Thank you. That's helpful. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shashank. The next question is from Tushar Manudhane of Motilal.
Thanks for the opportunity. Am I audible?
Yeah, could you speak up a little bit? We can't hear you clearly.
Is this better?
Yeah.
So just on liraglutide, while, you know, there is authorized generic as well as a couple of more approvals already, so, you know, how to think about this opportunity for Lupin?
I mean, for us strategically, I mean, you know, one of our first few injectables, first product out of India, so starts creating a reputation for Lupin on the injectable front. And still a sizable product with, you know, a third entrant into the market, potentially, you know, in October. We look at it as a sizable opportunity.
Got it. Ma'am,
I'd
just
also add to that, you know, with Saxenda potentially coming to market in the following year, because I mean, it's a very similar products, Victoza and Saxenda.
got it. Ma'am, with respect to respiratory Consta, the goal date being September 25, is this to do with certain queries to be addressed, and which is where the timeline is September 25? If you can just, you know, elaborate on that aspect.
Yes, we had a couple of information requests based on which the goal date was moved to September. So, and we are responding to them. We have responded to them effectively. So we believe we are on track for September.
Okay. This would be like just as a broad idea in terms of, you know, how many times or like how many queries typically US FDA would sort of view for such complex product before getting the final approval.
You know, it's hard to predict. I remember we had like looked at tiotropium. We had like at the end 18 queries, you know. So, but we are hoping that we are at the tail end with Risperdal Consta.
And just lastly on tolvaptan, in the past there has been certain tentative approvals. So is it not going to be competitive post 180-day exclusivity?
We haven't seen any tentatives so far.
Okay. Thanks. That's it from my side.
Thank you, Tushar. Follow-up question from Kunal Dhamesha of Macquarie.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity again. Just few clarification on the pricing comment. Ramesh, you said that it's a low single digit. There it is excluding albuterol impact or including albuterol impact?
Including.
Including Albuterol. Okay. That's great. Secondly, on Tolvaptan, is it our own REMS or is it a shared REMS with the innovator?
We don't want to share that. It's confidential.
Sure. And then thirdly, in terms of SEMA Canada, has your partner's filing been accepted by the Canadian authority?
No, still in the works. It hasn't
Sure.
been filed as of yet.
Sure. And the last one on Dulera CRL, what is the nature? Is it to do with some clinical data or CMC queries, or how should we think about that?
No, we wouldn't want to talk about that.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Kunal. Just a request, a reminder to participants, if you have any questions, please raise your hands in the participants tab. In the meantime, we'll take a follow-up question from Sahin of Nomura.
Yeah, thanks, Ravi. Thanks for taking the follow-up. Just few product-specific questions. Vinita, you had mentioned about a product called Dalbavancin some time back. Is this expected for launch this year?
Yes.
Okay. And the other question is on GLP-1. If I heard you correctly, you said Victoza generic in September. Is that right for the US? Is what you're
I
expecting?
talked about liraglutide, Victoza. Approval in September, launch in October, likely.
Okay,
Approval
okay.
already, sorry,
No,
launch in October.
launch in the next week.
September was really Risperdal Consta. That's what I was talking about.
Okay, Victoza like next year is what you're expecting.
No, Victoza has just got approved.
Oh, sorry, Saxenda next year. Sorry,
Yeah,
I.
next. Yeah, it's confusing.
Yeah, so Saxenda, you're expect just to clarify, Saxenda, you're expecting this year approval, FY26?
We are hoping that we get approved sooner rather than later. I mean, the goal date is into next year, but now that we've got the Victoza product approval, we hope that the FDA is going to expedite.
Okay. Given that you're one of the few companies which have been able to get an approval for a GLP-1 product, just from a regulatory standpoint, maybe for the US, of course, and for other markets, how do you see the hurdle from a regulatory approval perspective? Is there any takeaway for semaglutide, or these are completely different products? And also on SEMA, Nilesh, if you can share your thoughts on India and the other markets and how excited you are about the opportunity next year.
Yeah, I think that it's fair to say liraglutide was a complex product approval through the FDA. The team really worked hard to respond to a number of pretty tricky queries. And we believe that not everyone will get to the finish line. So we think that the competitive dynamics there might be a little bit different than we had earlier expected.
I think what it does also is gives us a lot more capability. It gives our people a lot more confidence to be able to develop other products in the GLP-1 space. On semaglutide, India, the injectable, we hope to be in the first wave. That will come through partnership. The oral solid is what we're developing internally. That will come a little later, hopefully in the next fiscal.
Okay, you mean fiscal 27? You
Yeah,
expect to.
FY27 for the oral, FY20, end of FY26 for the injectable. We're a large metabolic player, so obviously from that perspective, this is it's very interesting. There will be competition, but I think we should be able to get more than typical share.
And do you see any risk of delay launch from a regulatory standpoint in India for the injectable?
So nobody's got it yet, right? And everybody, it's under development across the board. So I think there could be, but I think better than even chances of it coming through at that time.
Understood. Okay. Thanks a lot.
A final reminder to all participants who want to ask questions, please raise your hand in the participants tab. Since there are no further questions, Sam, and I would hand it over to the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you, Ravi. I hope we were able to respond to all your questions. I know a number of questions on our portfolio and portfolio evolution, as well as growth prospects. I just want to reiterate that we are very optimistic that we continue our growth momentum this fiscal year, as well as in the next couple of years, as despite the challenges on additional competition on key products. We believe that we have significant drivers, growth drivers in place, and the team is very excited and energized to build on the success that we have built over the last couple of years and into this fiscal year as well. So look forward to continuing the momentum and connecting with you again over the next couple of quarters. Thank you.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Lupin Limited, this concludes our conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now exit the webinar.